From Carolina down to Georgia, smell the jasmine and magnolia. Sleepy sweet home, Alabama, roll tide, roll. Muddy water, Mississippi, blessed Graceland whispers to me. Carry on, sweet southern country.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. Still to come, State Senator Chris Elliott, that's about an hour from now, our returning champion. So make sure you stick around for that. Joining us now on the line, he's a candidate for the 1st Congressional District. Got to know him a little bit on the campaign trail. But Austin Sidwell is with us. Austin, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Jeff. How are you doing?
Doing well, doing well. Thanks for making time. Well, I guess first off, let's kick it off here. How's the campaign going?
Oh, it's going well. Obviously, there's a little bit of chaos going on with the redistricting right now, but we love the opportunity to have another 3 months just about to campaign. So we're still out there every single day working the campaign real hard.
Well, talk to us a little bit about it. For our listeners that may not be familiar with you and your campaign, but tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yeah, so I grew up here in Baldwin County, went to the Air Force Academy. I flew helicopters, did combat search and rescue for a few years in the Black Hawk, then was an instructor at Fort Rucker in the Huey. Moved back to Baldwin County from Dothan in 2023. Took over my parents' security company. Been running that ever since. And really, this is my first campaign in politics, first attempt at running. And really, I just believe Congress needs some fresh faces in there, some fresh ideas, and a really focus on the next generation and where this country's headed.
And if I'm not mistaken, you're also a lawyer, right?
Not a lawyer yet. I just graduated from Jones School of Law in Montgomery in December. Was scheduled to take the bar in February, and obviously the campaign was in full go at that point, so we decided to delay that. I'll be taking the bar next February.
Gotcha there. Well, let's talk about your thoughts on some of this redistricting drama. You got a new congressional district now. You're running in special election August 11th. My uneducated take on this, though, that we pretty much have an idea that this is gonna stick, and this is where this is going. That we're going to have two completely different congressional districts than what you guys have been running on for the last year.
Yes, so that's where it sits right now. I'm in of the same opinion of you. I think the Supreme Court's going to come back down and remove the injunction and allow us to continue with the 2023 Livingston map that was passed by the legislature in the special session a couple weeks ago. But basically, that took this district. It took it from 8.5 counties to include the 4 in the Wiregrass, and it consolidated it to Mobile County, Baldwin County, Covington County, and Escambia County. Obviously, it's something that needed to happen. I know there's a lot of talk about there. A lot of even the injunction was based on race. This move was not about race. It was about giving fair representation to the people of South Alabama. It's very difficult to represent the interests of both Mobile and the interests of Henry and Houston County on the other end of the Wiregrass. There's different economies, different people, different interests.
Well, and it's just that this is a community of interest. Now, I know, I guess back in the 80s and before that, they separated Mobile and Baldwin County. But typically, historically, except for that brief time period, it was all one congressional district. We all work together. We all go to school together. We all go to church together. But you had a congressional district with 1 and 2 where you just drew a line through Mobile, separated it by race. And it is as if the 3-judge panel said, hey, we understand this is a community of interest, but race trumps everything, and that's the way we're going to do it. That's my takeaway.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's wrong. I mean, that doesn't protect the interest. I mean, how do you split Mobile County in half? And not even directly in half. We just had a zigzag line across Mobile. I have people asking me all the time, I don't know if I'm in District 1 or District 2. My neighbor says they're in District 1, and I think I'm in District 2. And that doesn't work well. I mean, it doesn't get the representation you should have.
No, I mean, it's not, it's as the 3-judge panel wrote in their injunction, a race-blind map. It's just not factual. That is not true at all. And I guess you'll find this campaigning that here's the best example, Austin, and you looked at the results and just how you divide the district in half, and right through the middle of Covington County went one way, and the other half of Covington County West went another way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's when you look at this, you know, the centers of influence like you're talking about, it's clear. I mean, this is the right map. It's not about race. By cutting out communities, by cutting out the city of Mobile, by in District 7, cutting out, you know, large swaths of Montgomery to ensure that there's a minority-majority district, that disenfranchises the actual, you know, the collective interest of the citizens of those communities.
Yeah, they just said that, well, we're gonna do this because we're trying to meet this quota, we're trying to meet this percentage, this ratio, and that's not the intention. It's not constitutional, let's say, right?
It's not. Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's not constitutional. There is nothing in the Constitution about division of districts based on a race category. It is supposed to be about the population, and it was supposed to be about the collective interest of that area. And then you look at not only the geographic distance between Mobile and, say, Henry County or Houston County. I mean, you're talking about 786,000 people. And that alone is kind of getting so far away from the amount of people we're supposed to be representing. And this consolidation also lessens the amount of people in the district and makes it at least closer to, I think, what our founding fathers had in mind. I believe there was about 30,000 in the original districting and how it's supposed to be. But we have got to consolidate those interests and make sure that people are being appropriately represented.
Joined by Austin Sidwell, candidate for the first congressional district here on the program. Austin, something I wanted to give you the opportunity to say, and I think you started to in some of the forums I moderated, but it was just kind of a time crunch thing. But one of the candidates who's now running in AL2 says he wanted to be on the House Armed Services Committee. And that was his, because that was like one of the questions. What committee would you try to serve on if you're elected to Congress? You think that it's important, if you're going to serve on that committee, that you do have some kind of military service. Talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. And I know, and I think I saw some comment somewhere, well, you know, the president didn't serve and he's the commander in chief. And I get that. That's a structure that was set up. That's fine. But when you're talking about serving on a committee that is dictating the rules and regulations around our armed forces, don't you want someone that's been there? I mean, and now how this race, you know, is shaping up now, you know, me and I believe John Mills are the only other veterans in this race. And I think that matters. I think we need people in a era of endless wars and an era of, you know, cowtailing to the military industrial complex. It'd be nice to have someone in there that actually lived that. And I was deployed to Turkey, flew in Syria, flew in Iraq. Like I understand what it's like to leave your family to go serve the country. And I would like that type of understanding and compassion on the Armed Forces Committee. And I don't understand where you would go with none of that experience, why you would think you're qualified to be on that committee.
Well, the Armed Services Committee, to me now, it's a pivotal, it's a very important committee, and it's one that's coveted. But it's coveted for maybe the wrong reasons, that it's, you know, we can get more of our economic interest taken care of in our district. We can help the shipbuilders. We can help the rocket manufacturers up in North Alabama. We can help all these things. And that's based it's being used in a way for like an economic sort of committee rather than its stated purpose, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'll give you a good example, and this kind of bleeds into District 2, right? We have Fort Rucker that is currently undergoing a swap over in the way in which they do their helicopter training and contracting, right? Like I flew there for almost 6 years. Like you need someone that understands those contracts and how there have been loopholes put in there. Right now, there is nothing in the contractor-owned, contractor-operated contract at Fort Rucker that ties that contract to the location there at Fort Rucker beyond 5 years. And that is something you really get to know and understand the needs of the armed services, armed forces, from being in it, from experiencing it. Being an instructor at Fort Rucker, I can tell you right now, we start to move that contract off of Fort Rucker. Not only is it going to substantially disenfranchise the entire community there that surrounds it, you're also, that's a strategic foul. You don't understand the resources that have grown up and developed within that community that support the helicopter training program, right? But you only get that from living it. You only get that from being there. And I think the same applies to more on a more broad stroke level to the Armed Forces Committee as a whole, right? When we're talking about funding, when we're talking about what our military members need, well, yeah, I've flown an ancient Black Hawk that was not, you know, updated in a fashion that allowed us to go into some of the most contested environments overseas. That's an experience that you need when you're making decisions based on budgets, needs, allocation of resources.
Austin, you mentioned it, and this is not meant to be a got you at all, but the military-industrial complex and sort of this conflict we're in with Iran right now. What's your take on the way it's being handled?
My take on the way it's being handled currently, I was okay with not having the intelligence that, you know, that obviously our senior officials have and our president has. I was okay with going in there. The Ayatollah is, they've been an issue and a destabilization force in the area for five decades almost. However, I'm also a product of the forever rule wars in the Middle East. It's time for us to have an end game and to get out of there. I think that there is enough to say that we've accomplished our strategic goals, again, without the intelligence information that our senior officials have. And I give President Trump a little bit more leeway than others do when it comes to his foreign policy, because he's done a dang good job up to this point. So that was my stance a couple months ago. As this war has progressed, I'm ready for us to get out. I think that the chaos that's being caused by the Strait of Hormuz being blockaded is a problem, and it's affecting us here at home. Gas prices are crushing us right now. With the inflation and everything that's come out since COVID, to add a jump and a spike in gas prices like we've had, it's time to start looking at what's best for our interest here at home.
Yeah, because maybe this was the flaw in the strategy that we didn't take into account fully. I'm sure it was discussed, but not really fully understanding the unintended consequences of doing what we did.
Yeah, and that's foreign policy is complicated, and I understand that. I think that in the big picture, taking out the Ayatollah and taking some of the power and hold that Iran had on the region is fantastic, and ultimately it will work to the benefit of American interests. However, we also have to look at what it's doing right now. At some point, you've got to look at the Iranian regime and say, okay, well, you're not gonna give us the deal we want. We're just gonna continue economic sanctions, and we're gonna ensure that we get the benefit of the oil that's coming out of there.
Yeah.
But I don't support troops on the ground. I think we're at a point now where we need to start backing off, ensuring that our deal remains in place, get the Strait of Hormuz open, and get our men and women out of there.
Well, do you think that's feasible? That okay, if we start backing off, Would you be concerned? Iran, would they look at still meddling in the Strait of Hormuz if we back out of this? That if we tone it down, then all of a sudden they got free rein?
Absolutely, but unfortunately the dollars, the petrodollars still range right now. We've got to look at what that is doing to the dollar. Right now, is it worse for us to continue to have a blockade at the Strait of Hormuz, inflating our oil prices when we don't even get the majority of our oil from the Strait? And I get it. There's more products. Oil is in everything. This is not just about the price at the pump. But, whoever controls the Strait, we have got to get oil moving through there because our economy is tied to the petrodollar.
Or is it just a matter of, like, maybe scaling it back, but still maintaining some kind of presence to ensure that the Strait of Hormuz is accessible.
We have a presence there. We're going to maintain a presence. We have a presence in the Middle East, and we have to have that presence there. But I don't know how much longer our blockade and having our ships over there is benefiting the process right now. And I do understand there's greater arguments about what we're doing to China. I think we're successfully choking them off of resources that they need right now, and it puts them in a bargaining in a position to strike a deal. And I think that's ultimately Trump's plan. I mean, going through Venezuela, going through Iran, this is affecting China, and that's good. We need to show dominance to China. We need to stop kowtowing to their interest. But we also need to look at what's affecting ours. So I don't know, some sort of pullout while we still remain there as an arbiter would be preferable. I think that would be the best option right now.
Also, folks want to find out more about your campaign, get in touch. How can they do so?
Absolutely. You can go follow us on any social media. Our website, campaign website, SidWellForCongress.com. You can go on there. You can sign up to volunteer. Like I tell a lot of people, I am not funded by the big special interest in D.C. I have been funded by people locally, and I think that's what we need. You know, our congressmen have been bought by a special interest in D.C., and in order for us to fight that, we're going to need people from across the Alabama's 1st District to step up and donate to candidates like me that are outside of that system.
Awesome. We appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
Yeah, Jeff, thank you.
All right, let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Curtis Slow was the finest pickup to ever play the blues.